America. I'm Leslie Marshall. Good evening and welcome to the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. We are on the radio nationwide live. We are also streaming live throughout the world on the World Wide Web. Our stream is available on our website, LeslieMarshallShow.com, and we stream live when we broadcast live Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Do check that out. In addition, on that website, in addition to the live stream, you can click on the website there. You can sign up for my free newsletter. You can answer my quickie poll question, yes or no. Marky Mark puts that together each and every week. Just get the temperature from some of our listeners and those following us on the web. You can also read my blogs every Wednesday, Today Hump Day, for U.S. News and World Report. Also for Politico's The Arena throughout the week. I also blogged for them today. Check both out by clicking on one or both of the links. Click on the banner and the link will take you to the blogs. You can read them and add to the thread. Also on our website, you can watch my TV appearances if you missed me this yesterday on America Live with Megyn Kelly. Next up, you can catch me on Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on The O'Reilly Factor. All my TV appearances, sitting in for Bob Beckel on The 5, live from New York in the Great American Panel with Hannity, and other shows that I do on Fox News Channel as a Fox News contributor are on the website for you to view. Also on the website is the ability to become a Leslie Marshall Show member. All you have to do is go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/members, sign up to become a member, and even make that membership go further. Subscribe to our commercial-free podcast. They not only help you get the show when you want, where you want, the way you want, iPad, iPhone, iPod, and MP3 compatible, but they help you to support this show so that we can continue to grow. We're the fastest-growing progressive talk show in the nation right now, and so we can continue to grow in this election year to help have the fairness doctrine of our own doing, since we don't have one out there, and get all opinions out there on the airwaves. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/members and sign up today. Well, in this hour, we have a special guest. He's a friend of mine personally and professionally. He's one of the very few people I trust to sit in for me to host this show, The Leslie Marshall Show, which is my baby. And for me to hand my baby over to somebody takes a lot of faith. And I have a great faith in this person. He himself is an incredible talk show host. He's an incredible broadcaster, an incredible attorney, and an incredible friend. I'm going to tell you more about our guest. Mark Levine is joining us in this hour. But I want you to know that in this hour, in addition to talking to Mark, we want you to call in. It's not all the time you get to hear the two of us together. Normally, he's sitting in for me. He will be tomorrow, as a matter of fact. I'm going to tell you something else going on tomorrow. But tonight, in this hour, our number, in every hour, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. As it is your show, call us with your opinions, your comments, your questions, your concerns. Also, follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall. Tweet us. We'll share the tweets during the show and FB me by liking our fan page. We're maxed out at the 5,000 friends. Go to facebook.com/The Leslie Marshall Show. Now, a bit about Mark, who does not always toot his own horn as much as I can. Mark is a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. As I said, he's a great host himself. He hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and the Raucous Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. Mark is also a frequent debater who appears on Fox News Channel, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business Channel, and CNBC. He's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his Pacifica co-host on the left, and to me, Leslie Marshall on the left sometime. And I want to mention that in addition to Mark hosting my show here tomorrow night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern for you, and we all love that. It's a delight when he does. Our listeners love it, and I love it, and I appreciate him allowing me to have the night off. It is my anniversary and my son's birthday, by the way, in case you're wondering. Aww. Hubby has something special planned that would include, as long as the cocktail's involved, I'm happy. But Mark wants me to let you know that David Schuster and Mark Levine, personally, will be at the Supreme Court tomorrow morning. He will be broadcasting video live on his website, marklevinetalk.com, and he will be providing his analysis of the healthcare decision. So you can watch his face, Mark Levine, and he's cute, his face as he's handed a paper copy of the decision and the scramble to read it in real time. This will all start at 9 a.m. Eastern. The decision is expected to be released around 10 a.m. noon. Mark Levine, you know I love you. More than a pleasure to have you with us tonight. Hello, my good friend. How are you?
Thank you. After that introduction, I hope I fulfill everyone's goals there.
You got to live up to it. Okay, Mark, I got to tell you, I mean, I know I'm off tomorrow, but you know, of course I'm going to be looking at what's going on. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be up and I'm going to see what goes on at 10 a.m. Eastern. Everybody's speculating. Everybody has their predictions. Please tell me I'm wrong to fear that Roberts is the one reading the decision, that it will be a conservative against the president decision, or is my pessimism right on this time?
Going into the Supreme Court decision prior to oral argument, I could have easily said that any law student in the country would fail their class if they were to find the health care law unconstitutional. After all, Medicare is definitely constitutional. It's existed for 50 years, and this law is far, far less than Medicare. And we've talked at length. There's so many ways it's constitutional. Any one of these ways makes it constitutional under Article 1, Section 8. There's the Interstate Commerce Clause. There's the Tax and Spend Clause. There's the General Welfare Clause. There's a Necessary and Proper Clause. Any of those four clauses alone make it constitutional. But then I heard oral argument, as you did, Leslie, and I heard some really strange questions from the conservative five. And, you know, Scalia, of course, I had no hope for. I'll tell you this, though. Interestingly, Kennedy, who is usually the swing vote, he was not at all favorable. Frankly, he asked some of the toughest questions. Chief Justice Roberts, interestingly, and remember, he voted the, you might say, the liberal way. I think it's the constitutional way on the Arizona immigration decision. He was the one who, of all the conservative justices, and don't get me wrong, he asked a lot of severe questions, he was the only one to seem to show both sides. So if they actually come out the right way and find this thing constitutional, the fact that Chief Justice Roberts is reading it may mean he's a swing vote. But I have to be clear, I'm not optimistic. Given the questions, I think it's quite likely to at least strike down the individual mandate. Probably not more than that. But again, you know, the Supreme Court doesn't tell us their thoughts, and where everyone is just speculating.
Obviously. But you know better than I as an attorney. You know better than I, having, you know, stood there before the Supreme Court as an attorney, being in Washington and, you know, being an expert on that compared to me. You know, I have a knowledge of it, but certainly not, you know, the knowledge and the experience that you have, especially firsthand. Isn't it true, though, Mark, that sometimes, you know, the oral arguments, you know, somebody could say that they're like 99.9, if not 100% convinced it's going to go one way and it goes completely the other direction? Or would you, I mean, if you had to like lay out with this court the oral arguments on some big issues, Arizona as an example, how compared to the oral arguments did their final, you know, decision and their final vote bode out?
Well, usually the oral arguments are a pretty good clue. You're absolutely right. Sometimes the oral arguments all go in one way, and then the decision is the other way. On the Arizona decision, the lawyers, the judges asked, I would argue, more fair questions on both sides. I mean, Scalia and Alito didn't, and of course Thomas doesn't speak. But the two justices that voted with the liberal four, of course, were Roberts and Anthony Kennedy, and I would say that their oral arguments were more both-sided than they were in this case. So all the tea leaves point negative. On the other hand, this would be an extremely aggressive decision to strike down a law that everyone knows we've been trying to pass since Harry Truman. Hillary Clinton tried. It was very hard. We only had 60 votes in the Senate. The Democrats, for just a very few months, the Republicans have been filibustering all of Obama's signature legislation, and this is the only one that got through. For the court to declare it unconstitutional when it is very, very minor compared with things like Social Security and Medicare, which, let's face it, if this decision is unconstitutional, if you apply it logically, then Social Security and Medicare are unconstitutional too, particularly Medicare. There's no way to justify Medicare's constitutionality if they find this decision this unconstitutional. The thing is this, though. The current Supreme Court is not really acting according to law. Really, ever since Bush v. Gore and Citizens United, we should know this is not a court that looks at the strict construction of the Constitution and makes decisions on that basis. This is a highly political court, perhaps one of the most political courts in American history. Justice Scalia, in fact, in the immigration decision, gave his analysis of why he disagreed with President Obama's policy, seeming to forget that he's not a politician. He's a judge. He's supposed to interpret the law. He's not supposed to make the law. So it's a very highly political court. I think that only on a political basis could you ever justify holding this law unconstitutional and still keeping the constitutionality of Medicare. And yet, that is exactly what I expect they will do.
Scalia's chastisement of the president. Is this, as you said, a political court? Yes. This isn't typical for somebody to chastise the commander in chief, and also, in a sense, to be sort of like, I lost, but I'm going to write, you know, a 22-page brief, you know, talking about what, you know, what sour grapes I have and how sore loser I am. I posted that, as you know, that he is a sore loser.
Angry dissents are actually fairly common at the court. One of my favorite angry dissents, frankly, was Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer's after Bush v. Gore. I was angry myself, and I would have dissented myself. But angry dissents are usually directed at the logic of the majority opinion. They're directed at the fellow justices. They say, you're wrong, let me tell you why you're wrong, and you're sorely wrong. To have the dissenting justice attack not the majority opinion and its logic, but to attack the President of the United States on a matter that wasn't even an issue in the lawsuit is, I think, unheard of. I've never heard of it before, and I've watched the court for many years. It shows that Scalia, the politician, except that justices are not supposed to be politicians. They're supposed to be referees. And Antonin Scalia, above all the nine justices, doesn't seem to know his role.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more. We have a lot to talk about. I do want to talk a little bit more about Roberts reading the decision first. I know we touched upon that. I want to talk about Arizona. I want to talk about the power in the decision of Arizona. It would seem, at least by Kennedy and the majority of those voting, or at least the five, the vote of five, to put the power in the hands of the federal government. More so than states, and also what the outcome, if the mandate is not upheld, will be for both President Obama and for former Governor Mitt Romney. Those are just some of the things we'll talk about with Mark Levine, our guest, who is host of the Washington-based radio television show, The Inside Scoop, and the Raucous Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington. Mark also frequently appears on Fox, MSNBC, Fox Business, and CNBC. We'll be talking with him. You know him. He sits in for me. I'm Leslie Marshall. Back with you, back with our guest, right after this. Join us, 888-6-LESLIE. I want your predictions tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, America. Your predictions. How will the Supreme Court rule? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543.
The Leslie Marshall Show. Truth and common sense fused together for you. Call her now at 888-6-LESLIE. Keep Leslie in your pocket. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/members.
And we're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Our guest, Mark Levine, in this hour sits in for me, often small segments, so we'll get right to it. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. We talked about Roberts reading the decision first. That didn't send up a red flag, or you said it did. Then again, because you brought up a good point, he was pretty fair with the oral arguments.
He was the fairest of the five. I would still say he was negative and more negative than positive, but I would say that he was the least negative of the five. Let me be clear. There are three main possibilities.
I want you to say that, because right when I heard that, I thought, oh, crap, it's going to be a conservative majority because he's a conservative.
Well, he is, but again, he voted with the liberals on the Arizona decision. There's three basic possibilities. One is that it's entirely found constitutional. That's the one that every lawyer predicted prior to it coming before the Supreme Court. That's based on prior law. I do not expect that. One is that they strike down the individual mandate requiring people to buy health care, but leave the rest of it intact. That's the middle position and actually the one I expect. The third possibility is they strike down the entire thing. That'd be the most radically conservative position. I do not expect that. I expect the middle position of those three I named.
Okay, so you think it'll be number two?
No, I think it'll be number two. I think they'll strike down the individual mandate, but they'll leave most of the rest of it intact. I think that they would be too radical to actually strike down the entire thing.
We have the same court. We have some similar things, federal versus state jurisdiction, although different, immigration versus health care. When you look at how the court ruled and you know where Roberts voted with regarding Kennedy voted with regard to Arizona, and what was said by Kennedy that, you know, the power basically stays in the hands of the federal government, does that give you any inkling of how they would rule on this?
It really doesn't, because immigration has always been clearly a federal standard. I think the court recognizes that if there's a Republican president, that president is not going to want states to go in the opposite direction. Imagine Mitt Romney trying to deport every undocumented immigrant in the United States, and the state of Vermont saying, you know what, we don't want to enforce your laws. See, it works in the other way, too. You can have states that are more aggressive than the federal government, like Arizona. You can have states that want sanctuary, that are less aggressive than the federal government. And everyone understands that whether you're a liberal or a conservative, there should be one national immigration policy. It cannot be that you can go to another state in the United States and suddenly have more or less immigration consequences. So I think Roberts understood that. I think Kennedy understood that. It's very different in the healthcare situation. This is something where there really is no basis to strike it down, except for the fact that conservatives don't like it. And that basis alone, they're going to have to find something. They have to make something up, and it's really in many ways very extreme, but I do think they may strike down the individual mandate.
They're the highest court in the land. You can't appeal them, but at the same time, even though they're in a tenured position and can't be appealed, like you said, they have to make something up. How can you make something up when, like you said, every attorney, yourself included, found this to be constitutional, and you're not going to have time to answer it. Just think, because we're going to have to here's what I want you to think about to answer when we come back. If the court strikes down the mandate as unconstitutional, what does that mean for the states? Or does it mean nothing for the states, including the state of Massachusetts, where Mitt Romney signed that into law and pushed for that and proposed that? What does that mean, if anything, for the states? Because if something on a federal level is unconstitutional, ergo, is it for the state? We'll talk with Mark Levine and get the answer to that when we come back. I'm Leslie Marshall. You know Mark. He sits in for me. He's a great friend of the show, a great friend of mine personally and professionally. And he is a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees, in addition to being a talk show host in Washington on radio and TV with his talk show, The Inside Scoop, and the Raucous Caucus on Pacifica Radio. We'll be back to him, to you, right after this.
Keep Leslie in your pocket. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/members.
And we're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll come to your calls in a moment. If you want to join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Talking to Mark Levine, good friend of mine, personally and professionally, a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. He hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show, The Inside Scoop, also the Raucous Caucus on Pacifica Radio, which is WPFW 89.3 FM. And he also frequently appears on television on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, CNBC. He's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to even his Pacifica co-host on the left, including me, yours truly, Leslie Marshall, on the left as well. His website is marklevinetalk.com. Follow him on Twitter. I will post that on my Twitter page as well, at marklevinetalk. And we have a lot to talk about with the decision coming down from the Supreme Court tomorrow.
And I'll be on tomorrow night, as you said. So
yes, and Mark's sitting in for me. Yeah, he'll be sitting in for me tomorrow night, and you can also watch the David Schuster and Mark Levine personally at the Supreme Court tomorrow morning, broadcasting video live on his website, marklevinetalk.com. He will give his analysis of the healthcare decision, expanding beyond what we're talking about tonight. And you can watch his face as he is handed the paper copy of the decision and scrambled to read it in real time. That starts at 9 a.m. Eastern. Decision expected to be approximately around 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. Mark, before we take some calls, if the mandate is struck down as unconstitutional, does that mean anything for the states, or no, apples and oranges, because this is a federal piece of legislation?
It shouldn't affect Massachusetts too much because Romney Care is Obamacare. I mean, it really is, for all intents and purposes, the same thing. It will affect, though, virtually every other state. What that means is that those young people that used to be on their parents' plans may not be able to get on their parents' plans anymore. They're going to have to find health care on their own. If you have a pre-existing condition...
Wait. No. That's if the whole thing is struck down, just the mandate.
Well, no, because here's the thing. The mandate is very much tied to the whole thing. Here's the problem. The reason we need the mandate is because we have laws that say that if you need emergency care, you can go to the emergency room. What that does is that leads people, particularly young people, who for the most part are healthy, to say, well, I don't need health insurance. They don't buy health insurance. It's not in the system. And therefore, then they get run over by a car and they say, hey, you know, I need help in the emergency room. And then all taxpayers pay for it. That's why really.
Yeah, and on top of it, because, you know, I'm married to a physician. On top of it, you have more and more hospitals closing or merging. So a hospital may not have an emergency room. They share it with another hospital due to cost, one. Two, you have less doctors willing to work in the ER or to take ER call. Three, less people entering medical school and graduating from medical school. And when they do, they're a subspecialist, so they don't want ER. Some of them do. Some of them like it. You know, they're long shifts, but they don't work every day during the month. I mean, some people like the flex time. Some people don't. And certainly, although it can be lucrative, it really depends where you are, because it's not very lucrative if you're not in a very big city with a very big hospital that has a lot of money. So what's happening as our population is increasing in age, as you know, Mark, we are literally, I mean, one thing Sarah Palin was right about, death panels, but not at the hands of Obamacare, at the hands of people flooding the emergency room and the age of the general population of America rising. Because right now, my husband will be the first to tell you, he's an orthopedic surgeon, there just are not enough medical people to take care of what's coming into the ER now. It's only going to get worse.
Leslie, I'm going to make an argument you're never going to hear on Fox News. My argument is quite simple. If you're a conservative, then you very much want the individual mandate to be constitutional. I know that goes against everything you hear from the conservatives, but it's really quite simple. If you believe in individual responsibility, if you don't want to pay for someone else's health care, if you want health care costs to be low, then you want everyone to pay for themselves rather than having to pay for people when they decide suddenly to get health care the day after their doctor diagnoses them with leukemia. If everyone pays in the system like Medicare does, it can go out. But when you only have the people who are the sickest paying into the system, what does that mean? It means that people don't pay for themselves. We all have to pay for them, and our deficits go through the roof. So if you're a fiscal conservative, you should want the individual mandate, which is why it was originally proposed by the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank.
And I have to tell you, in addition, though, I have to say I don't think the mandate works anywhere near as well without the public option, because with the public option,
that's
you have
true.
More affordable options, and it forces the private sector, the Blue Cross and Blue Shield, the United Healthcare's, Cigna's, the Aetna's, et cetera, to reduce their premiums to remain competitive and keep, right now, because, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield can, you know, if there is the mandate, can just, you know, up their rates. What does this do if, in fact, number two, let's talk about every situation, okay?
Okay.
Let's just say that the mandate is struck down. Because what I saw with Arizona, I fear that you're right on that. Because it's almost like they can't vote. The conservatives that are going to make Obama look good just can't go 100% and go all the way to make him look good. Do you know
right.
what I mean? So it's almost like they just can't do it. They just don't like him. And like you said, they just don't like the law, even though they know it's constitutional. So they'll find some caca. So they need to have some caca in this, especially because it's an election year and people like Clarence Thomas, I'm sorry, it's my opinion. You know, I'm covering my ass for lawsuits with that, are bought and sold, by groups like Americans for Prosperity.
Well, his wife works very hard for the Republican Party to elect candidates for office.
Absolutely. And they want to keep all the
and
perks.
And think tanks.
They want to keep their perks, their money, their perks.
Conservative think tanks, not the Republican Party, but conservative think tanks.
Exactly. Like Americans for Prosperity, money funneled through those. But anyway, if the mandate is struck down, what does that mean for the president, and what does that mean for Mitt Romney, in your professional opinion, as both an attorney and a talk show host who is, very well-versed and knowledgeable in politics?
You know, it'll be interesting to see how it's spun. First of all, the devil will be in the details because, like I said, they're going to have to really make something up to strike this down. And then they're going to have to wend their way to try to save the rest of it. And, of course, the administration argued, I think correctly, that the individual mandate is pretty much the linchpin. The main thing it will do is it'll prove the conservatives that wanted to argue this was too expensive. It'll prove them right because currently under the law, it saves money. On the Congressional Budget Office, we actually make money from a 401k. affordable health care, but you don't hear that on Fox News. We make money on affordable health care because the money coming in is actually to the government is actually more than the money going out. But without the individual mandate, with everyone being responsible for everyone else, which, again, is what will happen if they strike it down, then the costs will likely go through the roof. And then you'll hear Republicans saying, see, I told you it was expensive, when really it's the denial of the individual mandate that's expensive, because everyone just becomes a free rider. They say, I don't need health care until I get sick.
Interesting. Okay, so if the worst happens, no, but I don't think they will.
It's possible. It's possible. It's not out of the question.
You think it's possible they strike the whole thing down?
I think it is possible, yes. I do not think that is out of the question. I think that is possible.
But they would have to say the whole thing is unconstitutional. And I don't think the whole thing is. I mean, I think that would be a stretch.
It would be a stretch. But I also don't think Chief Justice Roberts wants his court to be known as the most political court in American history, which is why...
Or the court that's screwed, all the old people in America, for one. And all of the children who have pre-existing conditions, all the people born or, who develop conditions that are pre-existing.
Yeah, I think he's going to struggle to split the baby in some way, which is why I think option two is the most likely. Mm-hmm. He may split it some other way, but I think option two is the most likely. But I don't think it will be entirely found constitutional or unconstitutional.
But if it is found entirely unconstitutional, how does that, or even entirely constitutional, how does that bode out? Because what I'm seeing is that Democrats are going to support the president regardless of the Supreme Court decision. Republicans are going to support Romney regardless of the Supreme Court decision. And the independents really aren't going to base their decision on Obama or Romney, those 15% approximate undecided voters. The Supreme Court that decision isn't going to weigh in for them, because their decision is really which guy is going to bring us to a better place financially, economically, 4 years from now.
I think it'll majorly affect our health care in America. I don't know that it will majorly affect the election. I think the economy and the unemployment rate are more important to most people, to the swing voters in the middle on this. It'll be spun all kinds of different ways. That's why it's important to actually read the details. But no, I really don't think the average independent voter, maybe someone with pre-existing conditions will care. Maybe someone who, a 25-year-old on his parents' plan or her parents' plan, maybe he or she will care. I agree with you. I can't imagine it affecting more than 2% of the electorate one way or the other.
Yeah, now it's interesting you say that, because this, in a sense, can backfire for Republicans greatly.
It might.
Because Republicans were hoping this would be a nail in the coffin of the president. But polls show, no, not going to be a nail in the coffin of the president. And like you said, there may be those, if in fact, that are affected negatively, that might say, you know what, I'm going to vote for the president simply because you deprived me of my health care, or you took away you reopened the donut hole.
It's a fascinating political issue, because polls show that while a close majority of the Americans don't like the bill, if you separate it into its component parts, each and every one of its parts, 75% majorities, including majorities of Republicans, support the bill. They like the idea that you're not discriminated against based on pre-existing condition. They like the idea that healthcare companies can't make unlimited profits. That you just go down the list, and they like each part of it, which tells you that, of all things, Obama has not sold us politically well at all. And that's really the problem with the bill. I think if it survives into 2014 and people start seeing the benefits when the whole thing kicks in, it'll be like Medicare. Everyone will love it and it'll never go away. But we may not get to 2014. We'll see tomorrow.
And I know that I invited you to be on about the contempt resolution charges by the Republicans that they're going ahead on for Attorney General Eric Holder. We will talk about that after the break. But we will come to a call or two. Mark Levine's our guest. Back to you. Back to him. And I do want to touch upon the contempt, Boehner charging ahead on the contempt resolution for Attorney General Eric Holder right after this.
The Leslie Marshall Show. Truth and common sense fused together for you. Call her now at 888-6-LESLIE. Put something worthwhile on your iPod or MP3 player. LeslieMarshallShow.com/members.
on air already. So we are ready. Hey there, Mark Levine's our guest. I'm Leslie Marshall. And we're talking with him about two things, the Boehner charging ahead on contempt resolution for Holder, Eric Holder, Attorney General, and also the Supreme Court. Approximately 10 a.m. tomorrow will make their decision with regards to the Affordable Care Act and the constitutionality of it, specifically the mandate and other parts of the health care law. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. Let's take some calls, and I am going to keep Mark into the next hour to talk about both of these issues. He knows legally the answers to both of them much better than I. Let's go to Michael in the Bronx. Michael, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Leslie, and good evening, Mark. Thanks for your invitation, but I'll be at work. I just want to let you know that I did see it. Thank you very much, though.
Okay.
My prediction, all right, I'm looking at two sides of this. On the legal standpoint, the health care law stands. All right, because of the fact that the Supreme Court's job, as you have said, Mark, their job is to interpret the law and interpret the Constitution, not to make laws. That's why you have Congress, the legislative branch, they make the bills, they send it to the executive branch, the president's desk, to sign it into law. And if they pass a bill and it's signed into law, then it will be constitutional as long as it's not violating any of the Bill of Rights or any of the amendments within that Constitution. But on the political side, as we have seen with Bush v. Gore, as we've seen with Citizens United, and Leslie, you remember how mad I got the other night when discussing the Supreme Court. If they strike this down, that I'm going to go on record and say not only have they proven to be political, but also proven to be bought off by these right-wing corporation riffraff and people like the Koch brothers. And as reiterates my argument is that I don't want people, I want everyone to understand within the sound of my voice, don't think for a minute that these justices are immune to consequences or immune to the law. My thing is to impeach them and yank their butts off the bench because they're unfit to serve. Understand this. If they have personally, physically, or mentally violated you or your loved ones, your spouse, your mothers, your daughters, are you still going to say, oh, there's nothing I can do because they're the Supreme Court justices, they're there for life? Or will you finally decide to take a stand and say, I want them off the bench, I want them prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law? Do I make myself understood?
Mark?
Oh, I understand what you're saying. This court, listen, the reason I came to Washington, the reason I quit my legal job and came woke the brief challenging the Florida electors and came to Washington and started working for Congress was precisely because of the decision in Bush v. Gore. So no one is arguing the lawlessness of this court any more than I have. However, I think there's a little bit of reality check here, Michael. You're not going to impeach the Supreme Court. To impeach them, you would need two-thirds of the Senate to convict. That's not going to happen. The people, if they commit some kind of crime, if they, you know, get to take a bribe, yeah, they can be impeached. But merely for their decisions, as awful as they are, it's just not going to happen. I think the better way to think about it, I mean, look, you want to rail on for their impeachment, I'm not going to say no. But the better way to think about it is, whatever you think about Barack Obama, and he gets a lot of attacks from the left, you've got to reelect him because whoever appoints the next Supreme Court justice matters. And if Justice Scalia ever were to retire, and he is in his 70s, and so is Anthony Kennedy, if one of them is to retire, we can change the direction of the court and the country. We can get rid of Citizens United. All we need is one justice, and I think that's the better way to think about it. I just don't think impeachment's ever going to happen. I'm sorry.
And I think I agree with Mark 100% because I think when we look at, that's what I always say, when you look at who you're electing, I mean, yes, you can look at, you know, gay rights, you can look at immigration, but it isn't really about that because all of these issues, in order for a huge change, I even say that to conservatives who are extremely pro-life and want to overturn Roe v. Wade. I'm like, it's about the Supreme Court. Everything is about the bloody Supreme Court at the end of the day. So, Mark, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Michael, thank you for your call, love, as always. Before we go to hour two coming up in a few minutes, I do want to touch upon in this hour, Mark, with you, because, you know, next hour, I'm sure after listening to us this hour, we're going to have a lot of people calling in.
Right.
Questions, comments, opinions, et cetera, regarding both of these issues and perhaps even more so healthcare. There was a last-ditch appeal by the White House that fell flat yesterday, and House Speaker John Boehner told reporters this morning he will proceed on a vote tomorrow to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for withholding certain documents related to the Fast and Furious gunwalking operation. So that people understand, one, what does that mean for the Attorney General? Has it happened before? We saw things happen with Alberto Gonzalez. And is the Attorney General within his right for withholding certain documents? Because my understanding was it's illegal for the Attorney General to release those documents because they are of a top secret nature.
The Attorney General of the United States has never been held in contempt of Congress before. It would be a precedent, but really very little is likely to happen after that.
No, wait. The Attorney General of the United States never in the history of America has been held in contempt
right.
of Congress.
Right. Well, Janet Reno was held in contempt by... See, the way you hold someone in contempt is first it goes to the Judiciary Committee. That's the committee I served on. And then you can have a vote on the full floor of Congress. There have been administration officials that have been held in contempt of Congress by the entire House before. And the Attorney General has been held in contempt by the Judiciary Committee before, but never by the full House or the full Senate. Notwithstanding all of that, very little is likely to happen. And the reason is this. The vast majority of the time, when Congress wants to punish an administration official for being in contempt, what they do is they send it to the courts, and the courts take a lot of time. When the Democrats punished Alberto Gonzalez and Harriet Myers for some very serious things there, I mean, they fired prosecutors who refused to make up crimes against Democratic government officials. I mean, to me, that's a high crime and misdemeanor. That is worthy of impeachment. That is Nixonian. The court found that they were rightfully held in contempt of Congress, but by the time it went up all on its appeals, it took 2 or 3 years, and they were no longer in office. That's what I expect will happen here. There is, however, a loophole, one that I don't think that this House will use, one that I urged the Democrats to use 2 years ago. Congress actually has the right to imprison the Attorney General or anyone they hold in contempt themselves. There used to be a prison down in the basement of the Capitol. It's not there anymore. Now they're just storage rooms. You can go there and sort of look at where it used to be. But they still have that power to actually lock someone up in their offices. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's interesting to note that it is a possibility.
It won't happen, but it's possible. Forgive my ignorance. Eric Holder is our first black Attorney General, correct?
Yes.
Okay, to lock up with a majority of white men. I'm sorry. Sorry, I know people get angry when we go there. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in hour two and talk more about these issues with our buddy Mark Levine. Hey, in the meantime, be sure to follow him on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. His website is marklevinetalk.com. I'm Leslie Marshall. One more hour in hour three on this hump day coming up straight ahead. We hope you'll join us at 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Right after this.
Leslie Marshall, when the truth matters. Give her a call now at 888-6-LESLIE.
Don't be looking at me, be listening to me. Happy hump day. Hey there, America. I'm Leslie Marshall. This is the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. Hey, we're on the radio nationwide. We are streaming live throughout the world on the World Wide Web. Check it out. LeslieMarshallShow.com is our website. That's where you can get our stream, our live stream. Click listen live or live stream. The stream is broadcasting and live when we broadcast live on the radio, and that's Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Check it out. In addition, we are heard on every American military base throughout the world on the American Armed Forces Radio Network. Troops, we salute you and all you do, and I personally appreciate you're fighting for me abroad to have the freedom to talk on the radio in many countries. I'd be shocked for something as wonderful as I get to do each and every night on radio. But I'm also on television every Tuesday on America Live with Megyn Kelly. Every Friday on The O'Reilly Factor. Check me out this Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. I also sit in for Bob Beckel on The 5. I'm on the Great American Panel on Hannity's show live from New York one or two Wednesdays every month. Also can be seen on FoxNews.com's webcast once or twice a month. America's headquarters on Saturdays sometimes, and Fox and Friends sometimes. Well, they asked me to do that this Saturday, but I'm like, I got 36 toddlers coming to my 5-year-old's birthday party. Are you crazy? I can't leave that. Although, actually, no, it'll be fine. Anyway, in this hour, just you and me and a special guest joining us who you love and I love as well. I'll tell you about him in just a second. Your opinions, your comments, your questions, your concerns, we invite them to. Not one, but two great topics we're going to tackle because two very big newsworthy items happening in the next 24 hours, and we'll touch upon them right here on the Leslie Marshall Show. Hope you'll join us. The number, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. You can tweet me, follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall, and FB us, like our fan page, facebook.com/The Leslie Marshall Show. Joining us to talk about two issues. One, the Supreme Court at approximately 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow will make their decision and will release that decision regarding the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act and specifically the mandate within the Affordable Care Act. We have heard now that Justice Roberts, normally a conservative, will be the first to make his remarks and will be announcing that decision. We're going to talk about that tonight in this hour with our guest and with you. Also, we are going to talk about the contempt resolution for Eric Holder, our attorney general, how the last-ditch appeal by the White House fell flat, how House Speaker John Boehner told reporters this morning he will be proceeding on a vote Thursday to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for withholding certain documents related to the Fast and Furious gun-walking operation. Both of these subjects we're going to be discussing with you, America, and with our guest. What I want to hear from you, America, tonight is your speculation, your prediction about what the Supreme Court justice decision will be tomorrow at approximately 10 a.m. Eastern. Your prediction, your speculation, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. I also want to hear, based on that speculation and prediction, how you think it will affect, if at all, and what it will mean for President Obama and for Mitt Romney. What it will mean and how it will affect President Obama and Mitt Romney, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. And also would love to get to your opinions regarding this contempt order, the first contempt order for an attorney general has actually never been held in contempt by the full Congress. And we'll be talking with our guest and you about that, your opinions about that and what it means. But in addition to your opinions on the Supreme Court sharing their ruling tomorrow at approximately 10 a.m. Eastern, in addition to your opinions regarding John Boehner and Congress, the Attorney General Holder being held in contempt of Congress and the first to be held in contempt of the full Congress, we have a guest that is a friend of this show. He's a friend of mine personally. He is a friend of mine professionally. He's one of the very few people I allow to sit in for me here on the show. He not only knows politics as a host of the Washington-based radio television talk show The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio WPFW 89.3 FM in D.C., he also knows politics, debates politics, and he's done so on television as well as radio, appearing on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, CNBC. He's tangled with Bill O'Reilly on the right, Pacifica co-host on the left, and even me, Leslie Marshall, on the left. But he is also a former legislative counsel to the Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, the House Judiciary, and the Homeland Security, and the Financial Services Committees. So he knows his stuff legally. As an attorney, as a former legislative counsel to such great committees and to such a great congressman, I thought it would be great to have him, can I say great enough, on the show in this hour tonight to help answer questions that I can't. He is more of a legal expert as a legislative counsel, and he has stood before the Supreme Court. Speaking of standing, I also want to share with you that our guest in this hour is Mark Levine, and you've heard of him. You've heard him sitting in for me, and Mark is going to be with David Schuster. He will personally be at the Supreme Court tomorrow morning. You can watch his broadcasting video live on his website, marklevinetalk.com. That's MarkLevineTalk.com. And he will give his analysis of the healthcare decision. You'll hear some of that in this hour. You can watch more of it tomorrow. And you'll watch his face as he is handed a paper copy of the Supreme Court decision and how he, along with others in the media, will be scrambling to read it in real time. This will start at 9 a.m. Eastern. His decision, the Supreme Court decision, will be expected to be released around 10 a.m. Eastern, approximately. That's with our guest, Mark Levine. You can check all of that out at marklevinetalk.com. But you can ask Mark questions tonight. So pick up the phone and join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark, we're going to tackle both of these topics. There are going to be people calling with their opinions on these and people calling with their questions these. But let's get to a caller who's on the cell, and he said his battery might die. And let's start it out with John in Chicago in this hour. John, question or comment regarding one or both of these issues with me, Leslie Marshall, and our guest, Mark Levine, in this hour.
Yes, hi, Leslie. Thanks for taking my call. And, Mark, I'd be very interested to hear what you say. I have to say about this. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was called before Congress.
Yes.
For violating the Boland Amendment,
yes,
which was a specific law outlawing the provision of arms to the Contras pardon my ignorance of geography, in Nicaragua, thank you. And he not only was not charged with contempt of Congress, which I think is a very serious law, contempt of court, our system doesn't work if people don't tell the truth under oath, but contempt of Congress is just so much worse. He was not only not charged, but he was nearly elected senator, U.S. senator from Virginia. Eugene Hassenfuss violated a law, and I forget the name of the law. You probably know it. It's when a U.S. citizen interferes with U.S. foreign policy. He was not charged, yet Johnny Taliban Walker did 20 years because he chose to convert to Islam and go over and help our former allies, the folks who were fighting the Soviets, and...
Well, let me answer your question about Oliver North first, if I could, because it's very interesting. He was charged. You're right, he was not charged with contempt of Congress. He was charged, however, with perjury. He was charged and convicted of scores. I don't remember how many felonies. It was a number of them. It was like a dozen different felonies. But then he was let off because he had gotten congressional immunity in order to speak before Congress, and that actually protected him from criminal prosecution. And that's why he was not put in jail. But he was charged actually criminally. He was charged beyond Congress. He was charged in the criminal courts.
Then I'm mistaken. But he did come within a hair's breadth of being elected the U.S. Senator from...
Well, that's true. No, you're right that he wasn't charged with contempt of Congress. But he was charged in the criminal courts. Quite severely.
What do you think
he could have gone to jail for a long time.
Is this bunk, or is this Monica Lewinsky? It seems to me like I recall, like within the first month of the inauguration of Obama, top of the fold, New York Times, Republicans frustrated in their inability to gain traction against Obama.
Yeah.
This country used to have what was called the loyal opposition. It was a reference to the party in the minority, meaning that, no, they don't have control, but they still agree with their opponents in that what is right for America is right, and our personal differences aside. And that no longer exists in this country, in my opinion. What do you think about that?
I think they're reaching. Look, no one's going to defend Fast and Furious because it was a stupid operation. It was stupid when the Phoenix ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau, did it under George Bush. It was stupid when the Phoenix ATF did it under Obama. But the thing is that neither Bush nor, I don't know about Bush, I know that Obama didn't know about it. Eric Holder didn't know about it. Even the National ATF didn't know about it, and it's testified. He had no idea, and that's why the Justice Department didn't know about it. about it. This was a rogue operation by a local government agency in Phoenix, and as soon as Eric Holder and President Obama found out about it, they fired everybody in that office for good reason. It was a bad operation. It's perfectly fair to find out why the higher-ups didn't know, to try to make sure that there are structures in place to make sure that underlings don't go on their own, as Oliver North once did, although it appears Reagan did know about that. So that's all fair. What's not fair, I think, is to do what they're doing now, which is they're trying to get documents from Eric Holder after he found out about it, after the people were fired, after the operation was ended, and after there was a mistake by the Justice Department because they didn't know about it and they said it didn't happen, when it just turns out Justice Department didn't know about it. They want documents after February 2011. That's the whole thing they're fighting about. That's after the scandal was discovered and it was over.
So Mark, that people understand why. To me, anybody, and this is not, political. I mean, this is political, but I'm just saying, the question, if you don't hand something over, somebody thinks, many people, myself included, what don't you want them to see? What are they hiding? Or is it a principal issue for the attorney general? Because some would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's not legal for him to hand over top secret information, even to Congress.
I don't think it's because it's top secret. I don't think this is a case of, drones in Pakistan or something like that. What I think it is a decision in principle. Remember, this is the first time President Obama has ever asserted executive privilege. George Bush did it some six or seven times. Bill Clinton did it. Bush Sr., Reagan, every president, going back to George Washington. George Washington was the first president to assert executive privilege. And sometimes it's fair and sometimes it's not. I mean, Nixon tried to assert executive privilege over the tapes, and the United States Supreme Court said 9-0. Nope, you got to hand those over. So when is it fair? When is it not? I think.
What do you think they're trying? What do you think they're hiding?
The only thing that they could be hiding, because remember, he's turned over 7,600 documents, and Eric Holder has testified nine times before Congress. So he's hardly hiding a lot. When you testify nine times, that gives people nine chances to ask you all the questions they want to ask, and he's turned over 7,600 documents. He's not hiding anything relating to the program, how it started, what happened in Phoenix, what happened in Mexico, who knew about it, and why the Department of Justice didn't know about it back when they told Congress they didn't know about it, which was, of course, a huge mistake because they didn't know about it, but they should have known about it. All that has already been turned over. The only thing that hasn't been turned over is documents in one year after it was all discovered, and the only thing that I can think they could be hiding is that I'm sure the president and his advisors talked about how embarrassing politically this is, because it is embarrassing politically, and they may have talked about how to handle it politically, who to send on Meet the Press.
And if Republican congressional members get their hands on it, that'll become public knowledge. And so, in other words, take the huge slap on the wrist as opposed to a larger embarrassment, perhaps. So we'll be back with our guest, Mark Levine, former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. I don't normally have a guest in this hour, but I wanted Mark on because we're talking about the contempt resolution that Boehner is charging ahead with for Attorney General Eric Holder. And we're also talking about the decision by the Supreme Court with regard to health care, the Affordable Care Act, specifically the constitutionality of that, and the justice's ruling tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, approximately. Wanted to get your speculation, your predictions on that. Wanted to get any questions that you have for our guest, Mark Levine, because as a former legislative counsel to those committees, as an attorney there in D.C., he's able to better answer those legal questions that you might have regarding both the contempt resolution for Attorney General Eric Holder and the constitutionality and the question of that with this court. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back to you, back to our guest, Mark Levine, my buddy, who's sitting in for me tomorrow night, as a matter of fact, so I can go to dinner on my wedding anniversary with my husband. Thank you, Mark. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Pick up the phone and join us. Predictions, speculation, concern, opinions, and questions for our guest, Mark Levine, right after this, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543.
Leslie Marshall, when the truth matters. Give her a call now at 888-6-LESLIE.
Want to hear your conversation with Leslie after the show? Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/members.
And we're back. I'm Leslie Marshall, back with our guest, Mark Levine, former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, House Judiciary Committee, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. I'm Leslie Marshall. Pick up the phone and join us. We were talking about both the charges ahead on contempt and the resolution for Attorney General Eric Holder on the contempt resolution, and talking about a decision that the Supreme Court is going to decide on approximately 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow morning. You know, Mark, by sitting in for me, and he is sitting for me tomorrow, that this is a very short segment, so let me ask you a couple of things. With regard to the Supreme Court's decision tomorrow at approximately 10 a.m. Eastern, will it be, in your opinion, like, regardless of the outcome, like Arizona when both sides declare a victory?
It depends on the decision. I mean, like I said, I predicted option two, some kind of middle ground. I think it's extremely unlikely that the court will give everything that President Obama wants, nor do I think they'll give everything the conservatives want, even if they rule in Obama's favor that it is constitutional. And let's face it, more than 90% of legal scholars thought that was going to happen prior to the oral argument. If they do rule that way, they'll throw some fig leaf to the conservatives. And conversely, even if they strike down virtually all of the law, they can't strike it all down. So either way, yeah, I think both sides may crow victory. We'll see.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. That's our shortest segment. We'll come back. We have another half hour in the second half of hour three here on the Leslie Marshall Show with our guest Mark Levine. Sits in for me. Will be sitting in for me tomorrow night. He's here to help answer questions as he is a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees, and I have not been. We'll be back. Don't go away. Join us at 888-6-LESLIE.
Want to hear your conversation with Leslie after the show? Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/members.
And we're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Only true democracy and talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. Mark Levine is a good friend of mine personally and professionally. He sits in for me, and he will be tomorrow night. And speaking of tomorrow, the Supreme Court is going to, at approximately 10 a.m., hand down their decision regarding the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Our guest, Mark Levine, a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees, who also hosts, not only sitting in for me tomorrow night, but hosts the Washington-based radio and television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and also the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. He has appeared on many television shows on Fox, even with me, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, CNBC. He's tangled with Bill O'Reilly on the right, his co-host on Pacifica on the left. He and I have even disagreed at times, but
That's true. But
with love, right? And right. Tomorrow, Mark is going to be with David Schuster personally at the Supreme Court in the morning. You can check it out on his broadcasting live web website. His video will be live on the website, so you can actually watch Mark's face when he is handed a paper copy of the decision of the Supreme Court, and that is on marklevinetalk.com. That's marklevinetalk.com.
Yeah, they can watch me scramble as I go and say, what does this mean? What does this mean? And try to read really fast. Hopefully I won't get it wrong as I flip through it and scan through it. Right next to all the other people in the news, it'll be doing the exact same thing. We'll see who can report it first.
And Mark said regarding that, there are three ways this could go. One, the entire thing is found constitutional. Two, they strike down just the mandate. And three, they strike down the entire thing. His bet is for number two. At least on Twitter, it seems a lot of folks agree. And we're also talking about the charges ahead on a contempt resolution for Attorney General Eric Holder. Mark shared with us last hour that no attorney general in history has ever been held in contempt by the full Congress, and that this is a way of punishing Attorney General Eric Holder. He said a loophole would provide them to imprison him. There used to be a prison underground, but he doesn't think that will happen. Let's continue chatting with him, and we'll continue chatting with you. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Mark, thank you for holding. Welcome back, and let's go next to Tony. Tony's in Buffalo, New York. Tony, good evening. Hello, Tony. Hello, Tony. Is he there? Okay, we'll put him on hold.
We lost Tony.
No, I don't think so. He's still there. I'm hoping it's not this left-right board thing. Let's go to Ray in Wheaton. Ray, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Ray. Good evening.
Hi, Leslie. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Question here. Explain to us, for average Americans, what is contempt of Congress for the AG? Will he be put in handcuffs, walked over to prison? If that's the case, who has the power to release him? My second, actually, question regarding the Supreme Court ruling tomorrow. Would it be possible that those conservative justices, I'm talking every single one, from Roberts all the way down to Alito, could they have actually collaborated behind the scenes through some other intermediary parties, helping their conservative friends when they took it to the Supreme Court and fought this administration? And I'm talking, I'll be very specific, there's a lot of conservative organizations that basically brought this lawsuits, Landmark Foundation, and a few other ones. They were hammering. Could that have been possible? And on a separate, actually, note, here's my question, or here's my comment, I should say. I think the Democrats have no backbone. They're linguine spine. Look at the conservative the past several years. They have hammered. When they see a Democrat on their back, they're actually just pounding, like beating a dead horse over and over, and they still can't get enough. And I don't see that coming from the Democrats. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay, three very good issues, so let's deal with them one by one. The first is the question of contempt. One thing I should make clear is that even though it's called contempt of Congress, you're not actually held in contempt by both branches of Congress. Really, a law has to be signed by both the House and the Senate, agreed upon by them and signed by the President. But contempt of Congress is done by one House. This will happen. He'll actually be in contempt of the House of Representatives, even though they'll call it contempt of Congress. And the reason he'll be there is because the Democrats control the Senate, and there's no way that they would hold him in contempt. This is a purely partisan thing. It'll probably be a purely partisan vote, and that's why the House can do it and not the Senate. He will not be put in handcuffs. I should note that I was one actually advocating strongly that Harriet Myers and Alberto Gonzalez be put in handcuffs and frog marched across the floor of the House because they were refusing to answer questions about some very serious things. Of course, the Bush administration had fired about 70 career prosecutors. People forget the scandal, even though it was only 4 or 5 years ago, because he said they didn't go after some Democratic lawmakers, governors and things that they wanted to prosecute for political reasons. It was really Nixonian, and we never did get to the bottom of it because they refused to answer questions. They were held in contempt, but the way the contempt statute works is that in modern times, they refer it over to, get this, the Attorney General for prosecution. So technically, they would say to the Attorney General or to people who work for the Attorney General, prosecute your boss. Now, that didn't happen under the Bush administration. They said, we're not going to take this case. And actually, the courts found them wrong. They said they should have taken the case. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. I suspect it'll all get locked up in the courts. Although, as I said, there is precedent dating back to 1857 to lock them up in the House. You'd have to find some office that has a lock on it because the Capitol jail has now been closed. But that technically could happen. I think it's extremely unlikely. I don't think that'll happen. Okay, second question was on, remind me of the second question.
Those conservative justices, could they have been behind the scenes through
third-party
intermediaries, collaborating with the legal Landmark foundations and other...
Let me answer that. So, first of all, they do work behind the scenes all the time. They get together, they discuss, they trade drafts back and forth of opinions, they try to persuade each other to change their minds. That's perfectly normal and accepted, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's standard business. Your question goes farther and says, could they have worked with outside foundations telling them how to develop their lawsuit? And it is interesting to note that Clarence Thomas's wife, Virginia Thomas, works for a conservative foundation. And she works for Liberty Center. She used to work for the Heritage Foundation. She works for conservative think tanks, and she's been known to raise a lot of money.
Mark, I wanted to jump in. I know you have a lot that you're answering. I wanted to sit back and let you do that. But my question is, You know how a judge will have to recuse themselves,
right?
Because of their position on certain issues. Why isn't this the case with Clarence Thomas at the Supreme Court level? Because I think you would agree, if Clarence Thomas were in a court in pretty much any state, on a local level, he would have to recuse himself with his wife's relationship in regard to health care. There's no way he can't be biased. And you know, if somebody says, well, that's his wife, well, they have a joint bank account. They live under the same roof. He is reaping the benefits of any financial gain that she has from being somebody who lobbies so strongly against something and did lobby so strongly against the Affordable Care Act.
It's a great question, and recall that Elena Kagan, the newest appointed justice, did recuse herself from the Arizona immigration decision because she had worked on it when she was part of the Obama administration. But the answer is really quite simple. The choice of whether or not the Supreme Court recuses themselves is up to each individual Supreme Court justice. That's the rule. You may not like the rule. You may argue that Congress should pass a different rule. Generally, what happens is, at the end of the day, recusal decisions are made by the individual members of any court, but they can be appealed all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. They're the only ones who get to make the final decision on their own recusal. Nobody without a law being passed by Congress can force Thomas to do anything. They can call them out. They can say it's terrible. Many people have said that Thomas should recuse himself on this case, and he has staunchly refused. And some on the right have said that Elena Kagan should recuse herself. She has refused on this case. But just to finish answering a raised question, I don't know whether there's been any collusion, but you know what? There doesn't need to be. I give the benefit of the doubt and say there isn't, because the Supreme Court all the time, if they don't frame the case correctly, they just make up something. Citizens United is a classic example. The Citizens United decision was about, technically, was about this group that wanted to run an anti-Hillary Clinton ad. It wasn't about whether corporations should have unlimited right to spend whatever they want, but the Supreme Court made it what they wanted it to be about. So they don't need collusion. They can actually just change it as they want it. And so I actually think it didn't happen because they don't even need it for it to happen. And the third question is, will Democrats walk away like wimps? I hope not. If the Supreme Court does this, they should treat it like Bush v. Gore. If they strike down this law or a large portion of this law, it's almost unheard of to have a Congress pass a law and then 2 years later strike down the whole thing or a large part of it. This was duly considered. There was umpteen hearings and thousands of pages of discussion, and it got through the Senate on two votes in the House. This is 2 years of work thrown out the window. The Supreme Court is not supposed to be a legislature. They're supposed to be a court. And if they strike it down, I hope Democrats raise holy hell, because it basically says that they're trumping the national will.
One more, if I may.
Go ahead,
who
just
really
one more.
Who has the president's ear? I mean, Mark, you obviously you're well plugged in, based on what your background is. Who really has the president's ear? And I hope to God they can go up to him and say, we need to take the glove off. We need to simplify it to the American public, because the other side is going to try to make it convoluted, and it'll throw people off, even people that are highly educated or informative about the politics in this country. We really need to simplify the message. And I hope to God that the president, someone has his ear, and they step into that White House, the Oval Office, and they tell him, we need to take the glove off and go after these conservatives.
You know who I'd approach? Just out of personal experience, I'd approach Vice President Joe Biden. President Obama is famously known for being very cool and collected. He's unlikely to get angry or shout or raise his voice, only maybe in a campaign speech. But Joe Biden, I've had long discussions with Joe Biden personally. This is a man who cannot hide his passions, and I actually think it's an endearing trait. I think it's wonderful. This is someone who, if we can get to him, I think he's very likely to go off, and I like that part about Joe Biden. I like his passion. He's the one more likely to see be passionate about this, in my view.
Okay, thank you. A lot of great questions, Ray. Appreciate that. Guys, we got to take a break. We'll be back. When we come back, we'll get to your calls. Try and keep your questions brief, even though those were good questions. I won't have time for all your questions if we keep doing that. We'll be back with my guest, who's sitting in for me tomorrow night and sits in for me frequently when I'm out. He's a great friend. I trust him with my show. He knows his stuff, especially on these issues, and we'll talk with him more regarding the Supreme Court decision on the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Coming down with that response, Chief Justice Roberts will be the first one out of the box with that, and that is a concern to me. He is conservative, but Mark did point out when we discussed this last hour that he was probably the fairest with the questions, especially of those on the right, even more center or left-leaning than Kennedy when their oral arguments were presented. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back with our guest, Mark Levine. We're also talking about the being held in contempt by full Congress for Attorney General Eric Holder. What does it really mean? How much is it political? And Mark Levine, our guest, says it's to punish. I'm Leslie Marshall. 8886-LESLIE is our number. Back to you. Back to our guest, Mark Levine, after this.
You're listening to The Leslie Marshall Show. Truth for all sides of the spectrum. Give her a call now at 888-6-LESLIE. Get her where you want, when you want. The Leslie Marshall Podcast. Go to leslimarshallshow.com/members.
All right, let's do this quick. I'm Leslie Marshall, back with our guest, Mark Levine, sitting in for me tomorrow night so I can have an anniversary dinner with my husband. Somebody on Twitter said, are you trying to remind him? My husband, I swear to God, does not follow me on Twitter. Can you imagine? I know he doesn't. He doesn't. But I don't know why. But it doesn't really matter. Mark, I'm bitter. No, I'm just joking. Mark, let's go back to more calls. We're talking about very serious issues, many issues, and Jack in Spokane joins us. Jack, good evening.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Great. What's your question for Mark?
It's very simple. I think we're at a higher level here to talk about the health care system. Why don't we just put it in simple terms like why we can't afford it because we're broke?
Wait. Mark, go ahead. Jack, thank you for the remark. Mark, would you, please? Because I don't think people understand. Even Republicans say healthcare needs to be reformed. They just don't like the way we reformed it. And it's if we weren't in an election year, this wouldn't be sitting in the Supreme Court's lap. Would you agree, Mark? Mark? Okay, I guess I'll do Mark. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Would you agree?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. The weird thing about it is that the thing that conservatives derisively call Obamacare saves money. All you have to do is read the Congressional Budget Office, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. It saves money. It takes in more than it spends. The problem with our current health care system is because we pay for everyone's emergency care, because we decided we did in the 80s, we didn't want people dying on the streets. Because of that, we all have to chip in. And what the individual mandate does is it makes everybody pay for their own individual problems. That's why it's a conservative idea. It will save money. That's why Mitt Romney supported it in Massachusetts. That's why Democrats, liberals like me, argued for better things, the public option or universal health care. The irony is this is something that conservatives, if it were passed by George W. Bush, would be celebrating. The only reason they don't like it is it comes from President Obama.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Okay, let's Jack, thank you for your call there. Let's go next to did we talk to Tony in Buffalo yet? Yes.
No, we didn't. We couldn't hear him.
Oh, let's try him again. Tony in Buffalo, are you there, darling?
I am.
Hi, Tony. Go ahead, sweet.
Leslie, when it comes to the so-called Fast and Furious, I don't know if you or Mark had a chance to read the article in Fortune magazine by a lady named EVAN.
I haven't.
In that article, she disputes all these. She says that all of these things that are going on in that congressional hearing are based on false assumptions, and they're based on there are no facts to back them up.
It's true. My favorite thing was watching Texas Governor Rick Perry, I forget what news channel where it was, where they said, you know, what is this all about? I said, we think Obama's hiding something. And specifically, what do you think he's hiding? Oh, I don't know. That's the problem.
He's not hiding anything. There was the only person that did anything in Fast and Furious was a rogue agent named Dobson who testified. He purchased 6 weapons and gave them to somebody to go over the border with out of his own pocket.
He's
a rogue guy.
The Phoenix office of the ATF went rogue, and they were properly fired. It was a terrible operation. No one's defending the operation, but it's really something that, if anything, you could argue they weren't doing enough oversight. That's actually a fair question.
It is, but Mark, if this had happened under George W. Bush's administration,
right,
with a Republican House, would there be any question? Would the American people even know about the death of this man?
No, no, of course not. How many people knew about Fast and Furious in 2006? It had a different name. It was a different operation, but it was the same thing, you know, watching guns go to Mexico. Really, we have a severe problem. We have 10,000 Mexican citizens dying a year because the Arizona gun manufacturers and Arizona gun shops sell them so many weapons that they outgun the Mexican army. It's a serious problem. It's gone on for a decade, and, you know, Fast and Furious was obviously the wrong way to deal with it, but that's the issue, and not, you know, whether, I don't even know, because obviously Rick Perry doesn't know, so I don't know what they're looking for. They're looking for a political issue. That's what they're looking for.
Absolutely. How much time we got, guys? Oh, good. Let's fit in another one here, and let's go to Dave in Buffalo. Dave, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Leslie. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi. When it comes to the Affordable Care Act,
yeah,
when you bring a case to court, don't you have to suggest damages that you've suffered some loss?
No, you do.
I don't understand why they're suing the federal government in the Supreme Court for losses, theoretically, when the law isn't even implemented yet.
Well, you're absolutely right. For a normal case, 99% of the cases that occur around this country, you're suing another person or a corporation because of damages they caused you. You're absolutely right. There has to be some damages. However, in these very rare cases, you can sue if you're a member of Congress or a state to declare something unconstitutional. These lawsuits aren't common, and there's none that you or I, Dave, would ever file. But they are certainly they're proper. The problem in this case is they really don't have a legal argument, and that's why no one thought they had a chance. Remember, some very conservative judges on the appellate courts said these arguments are ridiculous. You know, as Ronald Reagan's Solicitor General said, is it interstate? Yes. Is it commerce? Yes. Next, what's the issue here? It's really a very simple question. And you know, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I think there's some chance that they'll uphold it. Maybe they'll strike down the requirement of individual mandate but still keep the penalties for it. And that,
okay,
put the baby.
Okay, Mark, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, yes, we will.
Well, I know he's not cheating on me because he's talking to us right now. How much time do we have? 35 seconds. Mark, you know how quick this is. No. Huh?
Time for me to wish you a very happy anniversary.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Who's going to win in November, Mark?
I think Obama will eke it out, but it'll be very close.
You and Brad Bannon. You know what? I'm gonna have no nails left. Okay, Mark Levine, my buddy. Check him out tomorrow. You got to check him out while live on his website, marklevinetalk.com, and watch his face as that decision comes down. I hope it's number one. I think it'll be number two. I agree with you. Have a great night, America. I'm Leslie Marshall.